accuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll preview the D.C. Labor Film Fest with director Chris Garlock. We'll also discuss the Office of Personnel Management's 2011 Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey with AFGE Local 3403 President Carter Kimsey and Financial Literacy with author and motivational speaker Willie Jolly. Up first, Chris Garlock, director of the D.C. Labor Film Fest. Welcome back.
So good to be back.
Chris, I believe this is your third time with us previewing the annual Film Fest. Tell us about this year's event.
Well, it's our 11th annual Labor Film Festival, which, as you remember from last year, we hit the Big Ten last year, and so we're moving into our second decade. And we're really excited. We have a great lineup. As always, we'll talk some about the films, but I think just to be back for an 11th year, and frankly, you know, given the economic circumstances that your members out there are all too familiar with, and millions of folks across the country, one of the things that we were thinking a lot about in putting this year's film festival together is, as a labor film festival, you know, we're thinking about work, workers' issues, and art, because it's a film festival. And unfortunately, you know, art in tough times is one of the first things to go. You know, that's you see this in the schools, you see this in the arts and arts funding, and people, hey, times are tough and something's got to go. And so art's often the first thing to go. And so, you know, as we were starting to put together this year's film festival, in the last few years have been tough economically. And, you know, you start to think, well, you know, so many people out of work and all these really, you know, people losing their homes. And, you know, if film festival films, you know, it just doesn't maybe feel like maybe this is not the top of the list. And, you know, but then you start watching films, and one of the fascinating things is that this issue or these issues have really shown up, not just in your independent films or in your little documentaries, but they're really showing up in major Hollywood films. And what's really interesting about this year's lineup is that so many of our films, A, are American films, and B, are actually Hollywood studio productions. And, you know, we've been doing this for 10 years. We work with a number of other labor film festivals around the world, including the Rochester Film Festival, which I used to work on, which my dad runs, and that's been going for 20 years. And some years it's just been kind of tough to find labor films. I got to tell you, not a problem this year. So that's the upside.
Now, explain the importance of telling these stories and telling the history of the labor movement through movies.
Well, and that's the thing that we realized, again, as we're sort of putting this together and thinking about, you know, the importance of the film festival, the importance of labor films, and realizing that, you know, actually, if you go back to the Great Depression, that was sort of the high water mark for when folks were going to the movies. Now, obviously, they didn't have TV. They didn't have, you know, you couldn't get movies on your iPods. It was the dominant entertainment form at the time. But it was more than that. It was the place that people went to escape, you know, the tough, bitter reality of what was happening in the country at that time. And I think that in a lot of ways, the thing that we came away as we put this together this year was that, again, art is not a frill. It's not an extra. That especially, I would argue that during tough times, art is more important than ever. That it not only has the ability to make us feel better, and you can look at things that are tough. We have some terrific documentary, Inside Job. You are not going to come out of the Inside Job with a warm, fuzzy feeling. You are going to be mad. But, you know, I would argue that that's going to give you some much needed tools, you know, in order to face what's coming up in the future.
Before we get into some of the other details, where is the event going to take place and how can people get a chance to see some of these movies?
Absolutely. Actually, it's at the American Film Institute in Silver Spring, and it runs Friday the 14th through Tuesday the 18th. All the details are on our website, dclabor.org. And we also have, I'm thinking this may be our fourth year of Working Lunch, which is our compilation of labor shorts. And first of all, this is just a great little sort of extra that we throw in all week, the week leading up to the launch of the film festival. We do these labor shorts, and it's about 25 minutes, nine different films, some as short as 30 seconds, some a couple of minutes long. And one of the cool things this year is that they are all on YouTube. So actually, if you go to our website, you can just watch the lineup right there in the comfort of your own office, home, wherever you might be. And they're really neat. We've got a couple of musical ones that are really a Tom Morello. We showed one yesterday. And I was watching the audience. I've seen these films a million times. And so I watched the audience, and everybody's just tapping their toes and moving and really into it. We dug up a wonderful old Abbott and Costello clip that will just have you rolling. They sort of reprise their Who's on First routine with a whole thing about bakers. You kind of have – I'm not going to do it here. But it is hilarious. It's a couple of minutes long, but it's – and I'd never seen it before. I never even heard about it. So YouTube has got some amazing things in it if you poke around in the corners.
Well, what kind of response do you get from the locals who sign up for these working lunches?
You know, it's really funny. I think folks show up thinking, oh, you know, because they're held in union offices, and folks show up, and I think they're thinking, you know, it's a lunchtime thing. It's like a lunch and learn kind of got a – I think people think it's going to be kind of serious. And then I know at this particular one, we always have some funny ones. We always have some musical ones, and we always try and lead right away with something that gets you right into it. And you can almost see people just sort of – their faces light up. They relax. They've got their lunch. And folks really, it's kind of funny because it only runs about 25 minutes and folks actually come up to me afterwards and they're talking. And at yesterday's, there was a bunch of young workers. And so some of this stuff was stuff they'd never seen before. We have several that deal with the issues in Wisconsin this year. And so again, it kind of brings us back to the importance of art, because I think if I'd have gone there and given a 25 minute, you know, speech or lecture, and I'm of course a wonderful speaker and lecturer, not so much. I don't think, A, we would have gotten as many folks, and I can guarantee you that we would not have gotten people as engaged as these films do. Art really gets kind of past our instinctive barriers to getting informed, you know. So we try to entertain folks first and educate people second with a very, very small E.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Chris Garlock, director of the D.C. Labor Film Fest. Chris, on the notion of art, do you think that the success of the Labor Film Fest is a good indicator that things like the arts, the music, et cetera, are so valuable and shouldn't be considered an extra or something that gets cut whenever budgets become thin?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It really amazes me how folks are so committed, you know, 11 years in, so committed to the film festival, always around the middle of September, early October, people start saying, I haven't missed the film festival. When is that? What are you guys showing? And, you know, what's the T-shirt going to look like this year? And there's just a lot of I'm so close to it, obviously, you know, because the day the film festival ends, I start working on the next year. So I'm up to my ears in it. I think I get a little kind of blasé about it, but you know, people start really kind of wanting to know what's going on and getting excited about it. So yeah, I think the arts are really critical. And again, you know, for the movement, we walk picket lines, we go to rallies, we do our jobs. A lot of our work is very serious and deservedly so. And I think that we kind of appreciate a little lighter entertainment, but that's also got some teeth to it. It really, you know, there's all of the films, and I know we're going to talk about them, but all of the films are wildly entertaining, but they also have a point to them.
What got you into this? What got you into the Labor Film Fest and going down this path?
Well, I just love films, like so many folks out there. I just love movies. I mean, you know, I watch them all the time. I go to a lot of movies. I watch them on TV. Even the ones that are not great, I'm always interested. And I'm just, there's such a reflection of our culture. They're a very easy way to pass a few hours, to be entertained, and to learn a little something. And the idea, and I've had so many people say this to me as well, fans of the Film Fest, that, you know, this is a great way to see a movie and participate in the labor movement as well. And I think in the early years, people expected us to show a lot of very serious highbrow documentaries about the importance of labor, capital I, capital L. And, you know, from the beginning, we really didn't want to do that. We are, you know, true blue, you know, labor, you know, sponsored by the Labor Council. We are, you know, day in and day out working to advance the labor movement. We work with, you know, all the various internationals in town. So we are extremely serious about the labor movement. But again, we need other ways in. And I got to tell you, especially for folks that are not necessarily in the labor movement or who are new to the labor movement, especially some of our younger workers, who get about 5 minutes worth of labor history, if that, in their education. So many of these films are their first exposure to the movement at all. And so I think that they're and it's interesting, especially with the Working Lunch and YouTube, which especially young workers are very familiar with. We get a lot of response to that as well. So, yeah, I think it's incredibly critical. And the arts, I would say it's, arts is not just important for us. It's important for the entire country. But, you know, for the labor movement, I think they're very critical.
And it is fun. It is entertaining. It's enjoyable to participate in. But like you said, you are serious about the labor movement, and you really do tackle a number of key issues by using this outlet, particularly the whistleblower aspect. You have a series entitled The Whistleblower Series. Tell us about that.
We're so proud of that series. We work with the Project and Government Oversight, or POGO. It's a great, great organization. I know you're very familiar with them. Have done tremendous work, especially in the last few years, trying to get whistleblower protections passed. And we've been very proud to partner up with POGO. This is our third year, and finding films about whistleblowers. Interesting story there, which is, you know, there's sort of some classic whistleblower films. We show them the first few years, and I really wasn't sure where we were going to go with this, and figure we'd take it year by year, because, I mean, you know, it's hard enough finding films about labor. That's become easier. But, I mean, films about whistleblowers, I mean, talk about, you know, niche audiences. Well, we have two films in our series this year. One is All the President's Men, and one is called The Whistleblower. You know, so
how fitting.
How perfect. I mean, usually you kind of have to, I mean, like, people say, well, The Whistleblower, how, or the All the President's Men, how is that about whistleblowers? And of course, as soon as you say Deep Throat, people are like, oh, yeah, of course, duh. And then they get it, but that's a little bit more of a sort of a stretch. The Whistleblower, which is a terrific film about a Nebraska cop, becomes a peacekeeper with the UN, and then stumbles across sex trafficking. And just a real, and actually, we, as it turns out, we didn't know this at the time, but our screening is going to be on Saturday, is going to be the DC premiere. So go figure.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Up next, we'll continue with Chris Garlock, director of the DC Labor Film Fest.
Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to buy items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount with promo code AFGEMember. That's all one word. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Joined now by Chris Garlock, the director of the DC Labor Film Fest. Chris, before the break, we were talking about the Film Fest and its whistleblower series. Talk a little bit about the importance of whistleblower protections. Obviously, it is important. I mean, you've made an entire series out of it for the Film Fest.
Well, the thing with the whistleblowers is that, you know, especially these days with so much going on politically, it has become such a charged atmosphere throughout the government. I mean, we've seen so many battles. I know you've covered so many of those. Public sector workers have really been sort of under the gun. And so whistleblowing has become, you know, arguably even more important than ever. I mean, there was just this recent case of this amazing, you know, scam that involved, I think, just a couple of folks who ripped up some 20-some million dollars. I mean, you know, it's amazing. And you just, you know, every time you think you've seen sort of the worst thing that can happen, something else comes to light. And so the role of whistleblowers, you know, good, solid, patriotic, responsible workers, so often government employees who've got, you know, jobs to protect, careers to protect, would be completely understandable if they just keep their mouths shut, you know, and protect all of that. And yet time and again, they risk all of that to step up and talk about what they know is wrong. And, you know, they don't have the kind of protections that they need or, and deserve. And so that's why we've been so proud to partner up with the Project in Government Oversight to work on getting legislation passed. Now, you know, the film festival, you know, Pogo works on that. At the film festival, we're just proud to be able to show films that bring this issue. And it can be just like labor issues. I think a lot of people, a lot of times people think labor issues can be so complicated. Anything about labor law or, you know, things like that. And the thing about the, labor films is that labor films can take really complicated issues and just make them simple, entertaining, and accessible. And I think what's been real exciting for me is somebody who, honestly, 3 years ago, I knew, you know, about as much about whistleblowing as your average citizen. And so it was a real education for me to really learn about this issue. I've become quite passionate about it because I just think that folks, and I've met whistleblowers now, I think those folks are so brave. I got to be honest, I'm not sure that I would have, you know, their bravery to risk all that they risk to step forward. And so when we find films that are about people like the whistleblower that we're showing on Saturday night, who tell those stories in a very entertaining way and bring those issues out, it goes back to your question earlier about, you know, is art important? Is it worth, you know, fighting for in a time of tough budgets? Heck yes.
Do you find that with something like the Whistleblower series, people may come up to you afterwards and say that they've learned something by it, or may give them that reason to take that extra step if they know that something should be spoken about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's happened to me time and again. My favorite times, personally, as a director, you know, I've seen the films. And so my favorite thing during the film festival is to watch the audience, to watch for their reactions to the films. But then my absolute favorite time, I stand at the door as people leave after every screening. And sometimes, you know, last year we showed a French dark comedy that was quite challenging, and people had some things to say about that. But, you know, even people who thought it was, you know, like, what the heck was that all about, were fascinated and got them thinking about things. And the whistleblower films are often the ones that provoke the most comments because, again, it's something that people don't know that much about or are misinformed about. And so they come out and you will often see after every screening, the lobby is just full of people, you know, talking. And that's my favorite time. I love that.
Let's get into the roster of some of these movies now. I've seen the rundown. You have a great lineup here. A couple have caught my eye, in particular, The Company Men. Tell us about that.
Again, great, great film. I mean, Company Men, you know, it's got this incredible lineup of actors. I mean, you got Ben Affleck, Chris Cooper, Tommy Lee Jones. You know, this is an all-star lineup in a film. It's about these guys who, you know, good jobs, lose their jobs, and then how their lives begin to crumble when that happens. And they're just tremendously affecting portraits. And I remember when it's directed by John Wells from West Wing, and, you know, who's got a great gift with dialogue and also with actors. And this is a film you really want to see on the big screen to really get the performances. But I think that what The Company Men really shows is just, you know, what happens to men who are used to being the breadwinners and when they lose their jobs and how that affects them.
And it also gives a very clear, almost day-to-day picture of getting yourself back to where you want to be.
It does. One of my favorite scenes in the film is Affleck has to go to, I forget what they're called, but, you know, the company will give you a desk and gives you some, it's not retraining, but they give you sort of outplacement, I guess they're called, right? And, you know, so it sounds like a good thing, and it's really largely a scam. And he really, I think it's a beautiful, beautiful scene where, you know, he's really trying hard, but just the futility of it, when you look at all the stats that have been coming out in the last 6 months on the, you know, job figures, you know, you multiply the Ben Afflecks of the world by, I don't know, you know, 20 million or whatever the numbers are. And that's what's great about when you have a major star like Ben Affleck, you know. you know, if it's 10 million of us ordinary Americans, whatever, who cares, right? But when Ben Affleck loses his job and goes to outplacement, now all of a sudden folks get to see what is that actually like.
And do you see this movie almost mirroring the labor movement in some ways, where it's a slow one foot in front of the other to get back to where you want to be, almost the way that the labor movement has come along and all of these things that labor has fought for and won, they weren't won easily, and they were won with a consistent one foot in front of the other mentality?
I think so. I think so. And I think that one of the things about our film festival is that, you know, we're not just showing films about unions, capital U unions, or the labor movement per se. We're interested in films that are about work and workers' issues. And these kinds of films, like The Company Man, you know, what happens to these guys? Nah, these guys are actually management folks. So, you know, in some ways I'm looking at it as a labor guy thinking, well, A, they wouldn't be in the unit, and B, you know, he loses, I think it's Porsche. I mean, you know, tough life, right? Doesn't matter. I mean, a worker's a worker's a worker. And when you look at the labor movement, you know, it's something that, you know, for the last 150, 200 years, we go round and round. We make advances, and then, you know, the bosses make advances, take stuff away from us, which is what's going on right now. But, you know, I think that the bosses almost sometimes seem to think that, you know, we're going to go away as a movement, and we're not. You know, we're not going to go away. The labor movement is not going to go away. People are always going to want, you know, maybe not union with a capital U. You know, people want power. People want respect. And that's what a movie like The Company of Men is about.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Chris Garlock, director of the D.C. Labor Film Fest. Chris, another interesting one is The Inside Job. Tell us about that.
Again, that's a film. It's just going to annoy the heck out of you. Seriously, I thought I knew everything. I followed the whole 2008 meltdown, like I'm sure you did, and everybody out there. I mean, since, you know, all of our retirements and our jobs are tied up in it, and you read all the papers. But, you know, this really takes you behind the scenes. The director actually gets interviews with a lot of Wall Street folks, a lot of people that, frankly, should have known better. And, you know, it's really kind of cool to get some of these folks kind of call. And what's kind of cool about this is that you'll hear the director. This doesn't happen very often, but you'll hear the director off camera, you know, asking questions like, what are you talking about? I mean, because you ever have it happen in a movie where somebody will give an answer and it's not a very good answer and they just sort of go on? Well, that doesn't happen in Inside Job. The director will go, wait a minute. No, that's not true. That doesn't, you know, boom, boom. So I love documentaries, but I love good documentaries. That's why we don't show a lot. So I'd recommend that one highly.
Chris, as I was looking up and down your lineup, there was one that I wasn't able to find in the years that we've been covering this, and that, of course, is one of the all-time favorites, Office Space. What happened to the movie?
Yes, you and millions more. I can't tell you how many emails and phone calls and all our Office Space fans are bereft this year. Yes, it is not in the lineup this year, but it will be back next year, so...
Deep breath, everyone.
Deep breath. And actually what we're hoping to do next year is to put together an Office Space contest. Folks can come as Milton or your favorite Office Space character, and we'll have a little contest. We're actually hoping to bring the stars back either next year or the year after. So we're just taking a little break. No, not to panic.
Even though it's not in the lineup this year, what's the importance of the movie to the film fest, and why do you think that people have had such a strong positive reaction to it?
It's funny as hell, dude. I mean, it's just, you don't find a lot of comedies about working issues. I do want to mention that for my Office Space fans out there, check out Moon. Moon's our first sci-fi feature, and you're going to really enjoy it. And it's not funny, but it is fascinating, great performances, and again, you're just not going to find too many sci-fi movies about work. But that's a great film with a couple of great, including Kevin Spacey as a computer voice, which you have to kind of hear to believe.
Now, another one that looks good is Made in Dagenham.
Oh, great. It's going to sound odd, but that's a great date movie. Bring your girlfriends, bring your wives. You know, it's a really, and you can't say this too often about labor film. It's a feel good film. It really shows some real injustice in England in the late 60s with women in a Ford supplier plant who are totally discriminated against. And it's really as much a women's movement film as a labor film. But the way that they fight back is just totally inspiring. And make sure you stick around at the end. Don't leave before the credits, because in the credits, they actually show the women who are still alive. And so you don't want to miss that. It's actually pretty cool.
What kind of reaction do you get from people after they watch that movie?
That one, in a preview, there were cheers. And you don't see that too often. But people really were cheering and coming out. And again, a feel-good labor movie, which, you know, we always look for one of those, but they can be difficult to find. But, I mean, you know, we in the movement, I think we tend to focus a little bit too much sometimes on our myriad losses. But we have lots of victories, too. And it's nice to see a really well-made, major, mainstream film that really is positive.
And for the George Clooney fans out there, of course, he's going to make an appearance in a film this year as well, right?
Up in the Air, which is a film, you know, it came and went very quickly. And I think part of the thing is that people at the time, you know, it was just too soon after 2008, maybe because it came out last year. A really overlooked film, great film, terrific performances. Clooney, possibly one of his best performances, I would argue, very understated. He's this guy that goes around firing people for bosses who can't handle it themselves. And what happens, though, is that through this process, he learns some things about himself. I don't want to give away too much here, but if you've seen it, you're going to want to see it again. And if you haven't seen it, you really owe it to yourself to see this film. I mean, if only for Clooney's performance. Also, there's a scene early in the movie with when he's firing folks. All those folks are actually people who were fired. I mean, people actually who lost their jobs, who were recruited by the director to come in. And so if their performances seem a bit real, it's because they actually lived it. And again, I mean, imagine that, right? I mean, here's a major Hollywood film, you know, really dealing forthrightly with this issue of you know, people being fired and what that's like. I mean, it's riveting stuff, I got to tell you.
And one more time before you go here, Chris, how can people learn more about the Film Fest and pick up some tickets or come and see a film?
DCLabor.org got all the details, and or check the AFI website as well. And we run October 14th through 18th. Hope to see you all at the movies.
Chris Garlock, director of the DC Labor Film Fest. As always, thank you for your time, Chris.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll address this year's OPM Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey with AFGE National Science Foundation Local 3403 President Carter Kimsey.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to buy items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount with promo code AFGEMember. That's all one word. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Carter Kimsey, president of AFGE National Science Foundation Local 3403. Carter, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jason. Nice to be with you.
So the Office of Personnel Management released this year's Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. Tell us about the survey.
They did. They released it, I think, a little bit early. We've been watching for it for a number of weeks. Last year, it seemed to have come out a bit earlier, which made us a little suspicious. What's going on? the Employee Viewpoint Survey, but now it's out, and we've been reading it with interest. It's a pretty thick report, but there are some interesting numbers there. A lot of agencies, I'm afraid, have become less attractive as places to work if you look only at the numbers. But as we know, numbers are important, but they can also, we also need to look at other forms of information. And the feedback that I'm getting from employees is how much they really love their jobs as government workers. It seems that we're taking a lot of hits lately. A lot of people would like to see us with less benefits and lower pay. And we understand that because we understand the economic crisis that our government is in. But we also know that government work has inherent values that you truly can't underestimate. And I'm afraid a survey like this sometimes hides that. So I just wanted to be on record as saying that I think federal employment is still a great opportunity, and we would really like to attract young workers and new workers to the federal government. So don't be discouraged by the survey that you saw. The good news for us as employees is we're being asked what we think, and then through our unions and through other means, we're able to affect positive change in our agency. So we see this as an opportunity.
Carter, any agencies that may have stood out to you that made an impression?
Well, actually, as you said, I represent several, our local union represents several agencies, and the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment of the Humanities did quite well, and they have really good labor relations, and are working on making those relations better, and I think that it shows up in the numbers. I'm afraid that my own agency slipped a bit, but again, we see that as an opportunity to move forward. Some of the agencies that have been at the top of the list remain there. The National Regulatory Agency, NASA, and some other science-based agencies that I know something about are doing quite well and seem to be holding up quite well as we're all trying to cope with a lot of changes in the federal government.
What are some of the factors that made an agency do well in an employee's viewpoint?
Well, certainly employee engagement. I think the opportunity to advance one's career, to move up through an agency, to get hired at an entry level, and then over the years to learn more about the agency, to be rewarded when you excel, to have your talents recognized, and for you to be able to move into increasing levels of responsibility, I think is probably one of the things that's most important to employees. Really, nobody wants to stay in the same job for 10 or 12 or 15 years and never have an opportunity for growth. So I think those agencies that pay a lot of attention to career development do quite well, and that's something that the rest of us could learn.
And by and large, that's what federal employment does for a worker, correct? I mean, that's it's a great place to build a career.
It is indeed. And even, you know, as other opportunities might seem unavailable in your own agency, moving to other agencies also is a possibility. And with USA Jobs and some of the hiring reform efforts on the part of OPM, I think in some ways that's becoming easier. Certainly the information is more available as to what opportunities exist in other agencies. And as we know, like with SES-level jobs, the theory there is that you can be quite mobile in government, and executive talent can be used anywhere in government. And I think that's true at other levels as well. We learn skills in one agency, we can take them to another and make contributions there as well.
Carter, how important is it for the federal government to issue surveys like this to get the employees' feedback?
I think it's extremely important. And I think you'll see from the numbers when you look at the survey that employee participation is increasing over the years. As employees see that these surveys can prove a positive change, offer the opportunity for positive changes in their agencies, they're becoming more familiar with them, and they're becoming, I would say, even a little more trusting that the results are going to be reported, that we will have access to the information, and then we can do our own analysis and try to affect change at all levels of the government. So I applaud OPM for issuing this survey, and all employees who take part in it, I think, should be thanked. It's a better time-consuming process, but it's worth it, and I hope employees in the future, next year, will have even higher participation rates.
This is obviously a difficult time period for federal employees. You're in the middle of a two-year pay freeze, and the president's jobs bill called for a hike in the amount that you would have to contribute to your retirement plan. What do these things do to the morale of a federal employee?
Well, of course, they're not really good for morale. Everybody has to pay their bills, and everybody has obligations to take care of their families. But I think federal employees, are trying to hold up under it. and hoping that it's not going to be a permanent situation, that we're all having difficulties now in all sectors of our economy. This is a global issue. It's not just our own issue. It hurts, that's for sure, but my experience in working with federal employees is they're very committed to their jobs. They really believe in the missions of their agencies. They know that the work that they're doing is important and that they are providing services to the American people, and they're not going to let it get them down but so much. We are seeing an increase in our union membership, and that's really a nice trend because they realize that a lot of these battles have to be fought as a group. We can't do this individually. We really need to let it be known what a good job we're doing, and that's easier to do when you join together.
Carter, this is something we've covered extensively here on Inside Government, but tell us about the impact of cuts to public service and what that means to people who rely on those services.
Well, it's very hard on people, and one of the things that I think is missing from the discussion and I would like to put forward is that it's employees who are working these programs every day at the basic level of providing the services who know best how to save money and provide those services in a more effective way. Every federal employee that I talk to can point out ways that we could be more efficient and save money, but we're never asked. And I think it would be important for managers to talk to their employees and see what cost savings could accrue without major changes in the way an organization operates, but just, you know, pulling the belt in a little bit. It's the people on the front lines who know that, and they need to be asked.
Now, as someone who's had a very rewarding career with the federal government, what are some things that people may not know about federal service?
Well, some of the things that I think people don't know is, particularly now with young people getting out of college with such big financial commitments from their college loans, that many federal agencies will help with paying back college loans if you agree to a certain term of service. That varies a lot across the government, but I would hope that anybody with big college loans and who thinks a federal career is a good thing to do will take advantage of that. I think some of the family-friendly policies in our agencies are making them more attractive. We are beginning to look more like private industry in, for example, using telework. And particularly in the Washington, D.C. area where I live, that's a big plus. Just the energy that I save not coming to work but just sitting at home in front of my computer just like I'm at my office and getting usually a day and a half work done in a day is a real benefit. And I think for people who like the telework, the federal government is an attractive place to work.
And with telework, of course, as you mentioned, you save on travel and transportation costs. And also during times of unexpected weather, things like that, that would also provide an opportunity for federal employees to still remain productive and on the job despite not being physically in the office. Is that correct?
That's true. And I think it also helps you with your life-work balance. You know, if, for example, you live far away from your office and your dentist is closer to your house than the office, maybe you can take half a day off for an appointment and then telework the other half a day rather than take the whole day off. So, and with the work that federal employees do, we all have very heavy workloads. We're always looking for ways to keep the work moving, but also to have some balance in our life because even though we love our jobs, we love our families more.
Now, if you were to recruit someone to come and work for the federal government, what would you be encouraging them to look at? What are some things that they should consider if they were looking at a career in federal service?
Well, first of all, I would ask them, what's their passion in life? What is it that they think is interesting? And here at the National Science Foundation, what we find is that people at all levels of our organization, regardless of their job, really are interested in science. They like being around it. They like meeting the scientists who come to our agency for support and who come here to serve on advisory panels. They like that interaction. They like to read the news releases that our agency puts out. And there's a certain excitement because they really enjoy science. So I think everybody needs to find that passion. What is it they like? Is it healthcare provision that they're interested in? Are they interested in international development, foreign service, rural development? There's so many things that the federal government does that nobody else in the world does. There are jobs in the federal government that are truly unique. And if people like a challenge and they want to have meaning in their jobs and go home at night feeling like I've really done good things today, then the federal government's the place to work.
Carter, speaking of challenges, what are some of the challenges that you're facing as the president of AFGE Local 3403?
Oh, well, we're dealing with some internal automation issues for our agency, which is highly automated. We're always having to adapt to the changing IT environment that we live in, keeping relevant and up-to-date and getting the training that we need to keep our skills really honed is a really big challenge. And there have been a lot of reforms in the government. There's hiring reform going on. We've been updating, changing our payroll systems. These are a lot of challenges for us to keep the work moving and at the same time making these big changes in our working conditions. That's why labor relations is so important and that we have really good, solid labor relations with our management. Without that foundation, these changes are very difficult to make.
And if I'm not mistaken, you're really focusing on trying to make improvements to your agency that are going to save taxpayer dollars and make your agency more efficient, right?
That's right. And, for example, the centralization of some of our functions and using other government agencies on a fee-for-service basis is allowing us to cut out a lot of administrative costs. But as you might imagine, implementing those changes is a rather time-consuming process. So we're trying to do that as efficiently and quickly as we can with the hope that our overall costs will go down.
And, Carter, what are you looking forward to as we close out 2011 and move into 2012?
Well, it's going to be a tough budget year, as you know. We're very concerned in our agency about the number of grants that we'll be able to make, the number of young scientists that we'll be able to retain in scientific careers, because we know that our country's economic future depends on advances in science and technology. So we're hoping that we'll be able still to support all of the deserving scientists that the National Science Foundation supports.
Carter Kimsey, president of AFGE National Science Foundation, Local 3403. Carter, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll discuss financial literacy and security tips from author and motivational speaker Willie Jolly.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to buy items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount with promo code AFGEMember. That's all one word. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined again by Willie Jolly, America's premier celebrity speaker, singer, author. Willie, welcome back to the program.
It's always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the program, and I'm glad to be back. You know, I always thought the same way. I have only just a minute, only 60 seconds in it. Forced upon me, can't refuse it. Didn't seek it, didn't choose it. But it's up to me to use it. I must suffer if I lose it. Give account if I abuse it. Just a tiny little minute, but an eternity is in it. Hello to everybody listening.
Willie, we have you here today at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation's annual legislative conference. Second year in a row we've been able to talk to you. Tell me about what's going on.
Lots have been going on. First of all, I am very grateful for being here. And by that, I mean being here in life, not just being here at the conference, but being here in life. And I think that's an important factor for people, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whatever you're going through, to get an attitude of gratitude. So when you are in the land of the living, you should be excited. Even if there are challenges, you might be facing foreclosure. You might be facing a situation with your health or challenges with your marriage. But if you're still here, you got an opportunity to turn it around. So that's first. Second, though, I'm excited about all that's going on. I'm here in Washington, where I have a daily radio and daily television show with WHUR every morning on radio right before Steve Harvey Morning Show. And then Channel 9, CBS television every morning at 6:39. And then Sirius XM on the weekends across America on Channel 128. So those are going well. Media is cooking and building and growing. And then speaking a lot to corporate groups and organizations. But what I'm very excited about is speaking for a new tour that's going around the country called the Money Wise Empowerment Tour, Financial Empowerment Tour. It's brought on by Kelvin Boston from Money Wise on PBS, and he invited me to be one of the guest speakers on this tour. And it's absolutely free to people to come wherever we are in their city to learn about financial literacy, how to start a business, how to grow your business, how to get through the tough times, and how to create financial security. So it's been really great.
What are some of the foundations, in your opinion, of creating financial security?
Well, I believe the serious foundational issues for creating security and wealth, more so, is first getting a wealth-mindedness, that you are not ashamed or afraid or have any serious issues with becoming wealthy. And believe it or not, many people do. They say they want to be rich, but when they start the process, they self-destruct. So you got to get past your self-destructive issues, whether, well, you know, money is the root of all evil. And they hear that in the back of their head. But really, scripture says it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. So getting people past their own wealth limiting issues and getting to a point where they see that their possibilities are endless. Second thing, though, is starting to work on a plan to get there. And home ownership is one of the foundations of wealth building. And then spending less than you make.
That's a key point right there.
Yes.
Talk about that, about the challenge of getting people to buy into spending less than what they earn.
You know, we are in a society which is encouraged to consume. And I want you to have a good life, but I also want you to have something left over. And you have to start a process or some discipline. And one of the things I learned early on is creating a discipline for wealth building. And that's creating a mindset where you take whatever amount of money you get in and you take a percentage of it and you give it away. Give it away, because that's seed into the world, to the universe, that's seed. Then you get another portion. So 10% tithe or give away, 10% save, 10% invest. And then you got 70% to live on. If you took half of that 70% and paid your hard bills, that other 35% is for your rainy day fund. And before long, you start generating more in that rainy day fund. And that's where wealth is built. You know, if we play the game Monopoly, imagine. People go around the Monopoly board. You don't spend all your money on one property. You spend it over places, and you start investing it so that you are able to create some return on that money. You know, your money should be like little workmen. It goes out every day and works and comes back every evening with some return. And that's how we have to help people see.
How have people responded to that lesson that you're trying to teach?
You know, in response to the fact that we're in tough times, people are now saying, you know, maybe I need to listen. When things are going well, people spend, spend, spend. They spend more than they make. And they say, well, sooner or later, it'll figure out. It'll work out. But that's not how it works. But in tough times, where you have more consciousness about every dollar, people are now responding more favorably to this message. So on my website, I just did a whole program that is free. If people go to my website, sign up for my newsletter, they'll get some of the free gifts. A new interview I did on how to create wealth, how to create billionaire-mindedness. I did a show called The Billionaire Makers, and I interviewed Bob Johnson. I interviewed Michael V. Roberts. I interviewed Sheila Johnson on how you create billions, not millions, billions, and what they did to do it.
Talk about the need to educate people about the dangers of being consumer-oriented.
Well, you know, I think it's important that you understand that life is not about the things you get. It's about what you do with the things you get, not about how much money you make, it's about what you do with the money you make. That's why many of the success stories we know of billionaires are giving so much of their money away. Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, they're giving it away. And that comes from the Carnegie mindset. He said, I worked the first quarter of my life to make money. To learn how to make money. Second third of my life, I made the money. And a third third of my life, I gave it away. Because realizing that giving and making a difference. And if you're just about reaping it all in, it becomes shallow after a while. So we want to encourage people. And look, I'm not getting anything from telling you this. I say go to my website, get my books and all that. That's great. But this is just for helping people to live life at another level. My TV show is called Live Better with Willie Jolly. And what I want to tell people is that life is good. Life is wonderful. You're blessed to be here. So make the most and then make a difference. Make a difference and make a profit and you'll have a fulfilled life.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with renowned singer, author, celebrity speaker, Willie Jolly. Willie, the theme for this year's Congressional Black Caucus Foundation Conference is I Lead, I Serve, with a strong emphasis on creating jobs and bringing communities back together. Talk about the importance of that.
You know, I believe it's important. I just met a lady in the hallway. She stopped me. She said, Mr. Jolly, I listen to you on television every morning. I watch you or listen to you on radio, one or the other. And she said, you know, I've been working, trying to get a job for a year. I said, what do you do? She says, I'm an economist. I said, okay, let me ask you a question. Have you thought about maybe changing the paradigm where you're not trying to get a job, but rather you're trying to share the information you have in your head with people as a way of helping them grow their business? And therefore, you can get a lot of clients. She said, I never thought of it like that. Sometimes you got to think differently if you want different results. And one of the things I talk about in my book, Turn Setbacks into Greenbacks, is be creative. Be creative. Maybe you have to volunteer in order to get a position. I had a young man I met on a plane. He said he wanted to be in agriculture. I said, where do you want to work? He said, USDA. I said, well, have you applied? Yes, I've applied many times. They say they don't have any jobs. I said, okay, here's what I recommend you do. Volunteer for 2 weeks and be excellent. Give them the most effective, excellent work you've ever given anybody. And see what happens. I saw him about 6 months later. He said, you know what happened? I said, I know it was good. He said, absolutely. I worked for those 2 weeks. I did more than they expected. I gave more than they expected. I went further than they expected. At the end of 2 weeks, all I was ready for was to get a letter of recommendation. They not only told me, we'll give you the letter of recommendation as you requested, but more importantly, give us a couple of days. They went and found money and hired me to making $10,000 more than what I did before.
You do a great job of inspiring people and encouraging them to keep their head up in tough times. Give us some examples of ways that you have helped people to do just that.
Well, I guess the whole Setback and Setup for a Comeback book became a bestseller because it told people that in tough times, you've got to keep a positive attitude. And in tough times, you've got to think differently. Diane Moore Eubanks heard me on the radio one day. She was struggling in her business. She was about to go bankrupt. She said, you know what? I believe that guy is speaking to me. And she didn't know me from Adam. I didn't know her. But she said she listened to that show and sat in her car till it was over. And she went back home and talked to her husband and said, you know what? We're going to change our lives right now. And they created a company that's gone on to have massive success. They've built buildings. They've done all sorts of exciting things. And now they got all sorts of new other business ventures. Because just about paradigm shifts, that we can look at this life as challenging, or we can look at it as opportunity. I said that on my newsletter just yesterday, that failure is the mother of success. Success is born out of failure. So don't let failure stop you. See, it is not your undertaker, but as your teacher.
Now, as you go through the rest of 2011 and into 2012 and beyond, what are your top priorities? What will you be working on?
Making and taking my message to television, so we can reach mass numbers and mass media, more radio, more internet, and more television. Massive. I want to get my message out massive to people so that they can know that no matter what they're going through, that the best is yet to come.
Thanks, as always, Willie.
Thank you.
Thank you to our guest this week, D.C. Labor Film Fest director Chris Garlock, AFGE Local 3403 president Carter Kimsey, and author and motivational speaker Willie Jolly. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside.